Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Thanks for being with us. We're looking forward to today's show. Got Bill and the movies, Goody at the Movies. He has seen the new Alien Covenant. So there's going to be a monster, and it eats a lot of people, and then the monster gets blown up at the end. Did I just take all the drama out of it? I don't know. But we'll talk with Bill Goodykoontz about Alien and everything. He talked with Danny McBride and others. So that's Goody at the Movies. That comes up at 10:45-ish. Jen Bellinger is going to be with us today. This is a cool story. The story is the National League Rookie of the Year, in my opinion, right now, as we're sitting here on the 18th of May, is Cody Bellinger with the Los Angeles Dodgers. He went to Hamilton High School right here in the Valley. He tore it up, gave us great access during the spring, telling his backstory. Cole Bellinger, Cody's little brother, was on the mound the other night when Hamilton won the state championships in 6A. So you have the Bellinger boys getting it done. Clay Bellinger, their dad, was with the Yankees, had a major league career. I was talking to Pedro about this yesterday. What a great, great story it is. So mom, in the middle of all this, is getting Cody acclimated to the rigors of being a major league baseball player on a personal side, like finding places to live and all that, and just being a mom. And then the other son is winning the state championship. So I wanted to have Jen on because I think it's a terrific story. And yes, I do know her, not well, but I think well enough. And what a terrific story. She's a children's pastor at our church, and Jennifer Bellinger. So she's going to be with us a little bit later on. What a great story. That comes up here on the show as well at 10:20. We will talk with Jen. So Cleveland last night. So I'm watching LeBron James say, I am going to take on Isaiah Thomas. And I'm a foot taller and I'm 80 pounds heavier than Isaiah Thomas. Isaiah Thomas, you have no shot at all. So last night's first game of the final round of the Eastern Conference between the Celtics and Cavaliers is a nothing game at all. This game is over. There is zero drama. The Cavaliers had 10 days off, so guess what? LeBron looked great. There is a real problem in sports with what is happening with Tom Brady's concussion story yesterday morning from Jaceel and what we saw last night of LeBron James. I can make that very easy. If you guys have not figured it out yet, we have seen it because we watch it every day. Every day we watch sports. And that is this. The regular season of pro sports as we know them is becoming irrelevant, is becoming less and less important in some areas, irrelevant in others. You disagree with me? Okay, you buy your ticket to go see LeBron James in a who cares game in March because he only comes once a year to your city. But guess what? He's not playing tonight because they're going to rest him. What is more important for the NBA? That game in March? That game in Phoenix in January? Or Eastern Conference Finals? What is more important, Steph Curry being out on the court in December for a game in Phoenix, or Steph Curry being fully rested and at his best in May and June? Yeah, the day of sports, of just playing for the love of the game, for some of you, it's over. It's over. The regular season is becoming less and less important when the number of eyeballs on television sets or this device, which is this device will pass television sets, that's the screen that people want to be on. They want to see LeBron against Steph Curry here in a couple of weeks. And the way that it's going, I don't know, Boston's best chance to win a game, that was on their home floor last night, and that game was not close in any way, shape, or form. I mean, Tristan Thompson looked like an all-star last night. So the league has got a problem. They're going to get numbers for the finals. They are going to get astronomical numbers for the finals. But here's the issue. Both the Cavaliers and Warriors, if they go on to sweep their two series, would not play game one of the NBA Finals until the first week of June. We're sitting here today on the 18th. They may have 2 weeks off. 2 weeks of no basketball. Because both teams are just blowing right through the competition. Neither team has lost a game yet here in the postseason. And so you can go on about these playoffs are horrible. And last night's game was horrible. But it is setting up for a monumental NBA final series between the Warriors and Cavaliers. It's just a matter of time. I think we all know that. We all get it. Beyond that, it would be great to have a rested Steph Curry, a rested Kevin Durant, a rested Klay Thompson. It would be terrific to have a rested LeBron James and Kyrie Irving. This nonsense of what's wrong with the Cavaliers in January and February and March to fill up notebooks, put writers on planes to go to games that don't matter. They really don't matter. The Cavaliers didn't have the one seed. Who cares? Regular season is becoming irrelevant. I may sound like grumpy old guy, get off my lawn, but it's just a fact. LeBron and Love combined for 70 last night. There's no way, no chance that Boston is going to come back and win this series. And when you give LeBron James 10 days and his teammates 10 days to just sit around and rest, he probably got on a flight and went down to Jamaica or something, laid on a beach for a couple days, and nobody knew about it. What's the point? It's a problem. And now I'll take it over to the NFL. I'm of the opinion that Gisele's little slippage yesterday was not a little slippage at all. Send a message out that Tom has had concussions. Another volley back across the court at Roger Goodell coming from the Brady camp. Oh, yeah? You don't think these concussions are real? Hey, honey, just talk about it a little bit. And then see what happens and see Commissioner Goodell have to squirm and gyrate and move around and try to dance around and cover up the issue that is the biggest issue in that sport. So what does the NFL do? We're going to shorten overtime games. Yes, we are committed to we're going to clean this up. We're going to shorten overtime games. You know how many overtime games there were last year? 5. We're going to knock it down from 15 minutes to 10 minutes. We're taking this stuff really serious. Come on. Are you hearing yourself? How about, I don't know, get rid of Thursday night football. We are worried about player safety. We want our players to be fine-tuned in January. It's the same issue as the NBA. There's just more games in the NBA. Yeah, we're really serious about concussions, so we're going to shorten overtime when there's just 5 of those games from 15 minutes to 10. Makes perfect sense to me. Those guys. It's really simple, guys. You have enough. When Mark Cuban said hogs and slaughter, he was right. You have enough. Get rid of Thursday night football, and then I might start taking you serious on this. You know, what we could do is we could just shorten overtime. That'll get everybody on our side. Come on. Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather, that is interesting. Because McGregor has now agreed to terms. He's saying, I'm going to go in and I'm going to brawl. Those of us that have covered sports through the years, we have had this space where anybody, somebody, somehow, please give us something to latch on to that involves man on man or woman on woman in a ring. And it's gone through peaks and valleys. I think right now we're in a bit of a valley. What is going to happen if there's no Conor McGregor still out there? What is going to happen if it's McGregor against Mayweather? They'll sell gobs and gobs of tickets. So I think that story is interesting to me today. And beyond that, it's just, the baseball team yesterday had one of the best wins of the season. Sunday was one of the worst games for the Diamondbacks of the year. It's Mother's Day, and they just peed down their leg. There's no other way to put it. No other way to put it. And they blew 2 bases loaded against the stinking Pirates. So now they come back against the Mets, and the Mets bullpen is not good. And they get the walk-off home run by Chris Herman. The Herminator comes out. And Jack's one out of there, and they end up sweeping the Mets. They're 18-8 at home. Just when you think, they're teetering a little bit. I'm sitting over here saying, well, hang on. They're not playing against great teams. They have the Pirates who are not good. They have the Mets who are not good. They're at San Diego, a team that's not good. They could get this thing going a little bit more. So it was a good day. Very, very good day. I was very excited to see that. Jake Lamb had a home run yesterday, too. That's what's on my mind this morning. I'm in a fine mood. Jennifer Bellinger next. I'm really looking forward to this segment. Mother of Dodger, rookie of the year, in my opinion, sitting here in mid-May, Cody Bellinger. And Hamilton High School starting pitcher Cole Bellinger, who won the state title earlier this week with Hamilton. Very good local story, and then Goody at the Movies. I'm Brad Sussmat. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. Our television show, Brad Sussmat, Football AZ, 18 airings a week on Fox Sports Arizona. Good to partner with them and AZ Central as well. I mentioned off the top, this story is one that I really like because I've gotten to know this family somewhat. I wouldn't say I know them inside and out. I know I have Clay Bellinger's baseball card from back in the day. I can say that somewhere in my office. I know that I met Jennifer Bellinger a few years back. She's the children's pastor at our church, The Grove. I've seen Cody Bellinger grow up. He is, in my opinion, sitting here in the middle of May, a candidate, a very good candidate for Rookie of the Year in the National League. And Cole Bellinger the other night was on the mound when Hamilton won a state title in 6A. All that to say, there's got to be a mom that's handling all this, and that is Jen Bellinger. And she joins us. You're on a speakerphone in L.A., I hear. You're driving around. Is that right?
Yeah, I just got in. I flew into Burbank, and I'm heading to pick up my son at the hotel.
So you go pick up Cody, and what does mom say to son who's having just a terrific start to a season? What do you say to him at this point, Jen? Do you get out of his way?
I always ask how he feels, like physically, emotionally. We know it can be exciting, but also a little bit draining. So I always ask how he's feeling.
Yeah, yeah. So if we were to back up on this, when he was at Hamilton, could you have scripted this run for him?
You know, I wouldn't say scripted, no. I guess I would say, you know, when your kid is a passion and they have certain work ethic that you kind of watch them go through motions to maybe develop into something that might be special. You hope that happens, but it doesn't always happen that way. So you kind of go in with eyes wide open. So I'd say with Cody, it doesn't surprise me knowing just how much passion he had to become a professional baseball player. And then I saw, again, his work ethic to get him there.
The start that he's had, though, are you surprised as the mom?
Yes. I mean, I'd have to admit to that part. I thought for sure he, at some point in his career, could develop into this great player that he has already become. So, yeah, I think it was a little bit surprising for all of us. I think he might even be surprising himself.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Because I think the start of this was he's going to be up and then they're going to send him back to Oklahoma City. And I don't think there's any chance that's going to happen. I just don't see that happening for the rest of his career. We never know in baseball. I get that.
Exactly.
But this was supposed to be a 1 week or so cup of coffee, right?
Yes. I mean, he was up for an injury to Jock Peterson.
Right.
They obviously, you know, have other outfielders they could have called on, but it gave them an opportunity to kind of give Cody an opportunity to get his feet wet, experience a little bit. He was up for the freeway series, so he had already had a little experience up here. So for him, I think it was just an opportunity. Yeah. So then once everyone got healthy, he was supposed to go back to Oklahoma, and then maybe we'd see him later in the season.
What, in your opinion, has been the most daunting aspect of being a mother of a Major League Baseball player?
I think the challenge is trying to go back to your normal day of life and not be at every moment of your son's experience. You know, I think that, as a mom, that's probably the biggest challenge. That's why I kind of am trying to go back and forth as much as I can. I know eventually that novelty will wear off a little bit.
Sure.
I won't have to be, feel like I have to be there the whole time. And then I think on the other side of it, just being in an environment like Chandler, even though Phoenix is a big city, Chandler is a small town feel. It's a great community. And just all the support can also be just emotionally in a good way overwhelming. I mean, the community has been, and friends, and they've been very supportive.
The whole aspect of him being in Los Angeles, Jen, and I'm thinking in this day and age of social media and the opportunities to be in the LA lifestyle, nightlife, being pulled this way, pulled that way, social media, girls chasing him around as ball players. I mean, the whole aspect of it, you know this as being a baseball wife. with your husband, Clay. Mm-hmm. Talk to me about that a little bit.
Well, obviously, when Clay played, it was a whole different culture as far as media. I mean, we only had newspapers, and fans didn't have access to athletes the way they do today. And I think part of it is a false sense of access, because they can follow along in their basic life and think that then they have a little bit more of a relationship with the players then. And I think that's for anyone that's in a limelight, not just for athletes. But I think that's been the challenge is also, but I think also you got to remember, the organization like the Dodgers, they've done a good job like through spring trainings and having, you know, time to just remind the boys and as they become men that, you know, you got to be careful. And I think it's just been, it's been taught a little bit of a work ethic on that end of it, to be careful about what they post, what they do, where they are. So I think as a mom, I trust that the Dodgers have done a good job in giving them worst-case scenarios and kind of giving them training. And I think I hope also just my upbringing and my husband's upbringing, his knowledge of the game on and off the field and what he experienced without social media and all the challenges, hopefully he's reminded of all that.
Have you monitored his Twitter, his Instagram, and all that stuff, and looked at some things?
No, I don't have access. I don't have access to his personal, you know, back. Yeah. You know, I don't have his passwords or anything like that. I mean, I can obviously go on social media and see what people have said or whatever. But you know, it's the same thing when Clay played. You know, you could. I mean, back then, you know, AOL dial-up is what we had, so it was very limited.
Right.
You know, to what people could say about us, but. You know, he played in one of the toughest cities in the nation to play in, New York. And that media is a love or hate relationship with people. Randy Johnson experienced a different relationship there than my husband did. He had a wonderful relationship with the media. The media loved Clay. You know, they loved that generation of Yankees. And we saw that the media could also make or break you. And they have a lot of power in that. And now social media has some power in that. So it's been interesting to kind of see that change and shifting in that. But again, the bottom line is this: if you just do your job, you do it well, you keep your focus, then they have nothing to talk about or write about other than how you're doing on the field.
Talking with Jen Bellinger, she is, of course, the mother of Cody Bellinger and Hamilton High School pitcher Cole Bellinger. A really good local store here. Before I let you go, the other night when Cole is on the mound and Hamilton is trying to win the state title, okay? So now you have that aspect going on at the exact same time. Are you, like, watching him pitch and then looking at your phone to see how Cody's – how did you handle the other night, two games simultaneous?
Yeah. Well, at first, Cody was told ahead of time that he'd probably get a night off playing, because he's been playing every day since he was called up. So he was told Monday would be his day off. I mean, Tuesday would be his day off. So I thought, that's great, perfect. I only can focus on one kid tonight. I don't have to worry about what Cody's doing in San Francisco. And so then I'm with actually our third base coach, Chris Woodward, for the Dodgers, his wife. They actually live in Chandler, and she's still there with kids in school. So she's at the game supporting. Her daughter actually goes to Hamilton High School.
Oh, wow.
And so she's there with the, you know, with the big crowd of fans and kids. So we're all there watching and watching Twitter to see how the Dodgers as a team are doing. And we see that there has been a double switch, and Cody got subbed in. So, of course, I have the MLB app, and I open that up to watch. But mostly my eyes were on definitely on the field where my son was. I mean, that's the most important thing for Cole at this point. And I kind of glanced down to see what maybe Cody was doing. But my focus was really on Cole and the Huskies and them bringing home another championship. It was the best feeling ever. They did an amazing job.
I was hoping you would say, well, there were two outs to win the title, and Cody was at the plate, and I wasn't really sure, Brad, which to do, look up or look down. I was just hoping that would happen.
Yeah, you got to, you've got kids, Brad. You got to share that affection and that joy, right. You know, and make sure you balance that as well as you can.
What do you think the future is for Cole in baseball?
You know, it's funny because people ask me that a lot, to be honest with you. I don't know. I mean, I think with Cody, we actually kind of had that same humble approach of you never know. I mean, like you said, the game, it's sometimes you don't understand what they're looking for, looking at, and you can develop between the age of 17 and where Cody's at 21 and improve so much.
Right.
So with Cole, where he is right now, I mean, he's improved even significantly on one aspect of the game with his pitching, and he hasn't really, I hate to say it, but he hasn't really tried. So, you know, if he continues to develop under Andy Stankiewicz and that coaching staff, I mean, I could see him developing into a pretty spectacular player once he starts getting a little bit stronger. You know, if you know, there's plans for a draft. I know that obviously draft is going to happen in June, whether or not he's part of that plan. We also didn't know that for Cody. We honestly went into that draft back in 2013 with him having an offer to go to Oregon, and we just watched, you know, the first and second day go by knowing, okay, well, he's not a first or second rounder. We'll right. see what happens on the next day. And that next day, you know, we obviously had some insight based on some communications we had through texting and phone calls that there were still teams interested in him. And that, you know, we did still, but still, you never know. I mean, there are a lot of people that heard that too, and they didn't get drafted. So, you know, we'll just have to play it by ear with Cole, and we have a certain idea of if what it's going to take to buy him out of his opportunity in college, which he's got a great opportunity to go to Grand Canyon and develop into a pretty amazing baseball player. And maybe, you know, God knows the rest. So
right.
just take it one step at a time.
Well, and I think, for him being over there, Andy Stankiewicz is doing a terrific job. That program next year, when they're eligible to go in the postseason, they're going to go. And he's done a great job over there.
Yeah, no doubt. We obviously have watched him all season. And like I said, Andy's got he's got a pro league coaching mm-hmm. staff. And we know that Cole's going to be developed and taken care of physically, emotionally, all those things that you hope for. And you know, same with like Cody with the Dodgers. I mean, the Dodgers are taking good care of him and have developed him into an amazing ball player and amazing kid, too. So we can't lose either way.
Safe travels. I appreciate the time. Thanks.
Uh-huh. You're welcome.
See you soon. There's Jen Bellinger, the mother of two that are getting it done. Dodger outfielder Cody and Hamilton High School 6A champion Cole. I like that. Good Eat the Movies here in a few minutes. On the other side, I want to circle back a little bit more on the NBA Finals and the whole idea of rest and who is the better player, LeBron or Steph Curry? Now, who is the more flashy player? Who is the superstar? We're going to get into that a little bit on the other side because I think you can spice and slice all sorts of different ways on that one. Sports360AZ.com. I'm Brad Sussmat. All right, so Steph Curry and LeBron James. First of all, Eric, am I all over the roadmap on this one? Are you pretty clear on where I'm coming down, that the NBA has got a real problem with what we're seeing with freshness of players and the NFL with this Brady thing? Do you buy into that, or am I just...
I do. And I honestly think the NFL concussion issue is going to be a lot harder one to solve than the NBA resting players issue.
I don't know how you solve the resting players one, but like
it's easy.
It's easy.
If there's a primetime game on a Saturday or Sunday, don't schedule those teams on a Friday or a Thursday. Have them play on Wednesday, and then have them not play until Saturday or Sunday. And there's absolutely no excuse for teams to be sitting players. No excuse. You haven't played in 72 hours. You can play.
Do you think that scheduling games, like we know the NFL is every Sunday? Right? And we know it's Monday. We know it's
not every Sunday. Yeah, exactly. It's Sunday and Thursday.
And they should not be playing Thursday games.
Agree.
That's just, you guys are a joke in that regard of player safety.
And the games usually stink anyway.
Yeah, they do. That's why. But I think that if the NBA said we're going to play on Wednesdays, Fridays, Sundays, those are the only 3 days we're going to play. Because right now, what's the problem with the NBA? Every night, there is a national game of the week somewhere.
Yep.
TNT is doing Monday nights and Thursday nights now. ESPN is doing Wednesday nights and Friday night games.
Uh-huh. And Saturdays.
ABC.
Now.
Yeah, and ABC.
Or ABC, whatever.
ABC has, yeah. So there's nothing special about being on national TV. There isn't. And you're grinding your talent base up. They are being treated like a piece of meat, to borrow a line from Charles. And this is 20 years later. They don't care.
Their showcase, Brad, is Christmas. The NBA's showcase games are usually on Christmas, and they get huge numbers because they play on Christmas. But, yeah, other than that, it's not – I mean, like you said, Mondays, Thursdays, Saturdays, Sunday afternoons, it's all the same.
It's all the same. It's wallpaper. So does it matter if LeBron and Steph have 2 weeks off in between conference finals and championship game, because that's the way it's heading right now.
Because that's the way the schedule is set. That's how it is every year. That's the advantage of getting through these series as quickly as you can, because they're not going to move the games up. Like if the finals are supposed to start June 1st, the finals are supposed to start June 1st.
And the thing is, when I watch how they're playing, okay, we've said this before. Go see an NBA game in November, December, January, February, March, most nights. Put me to sleep. But you're telling people you're at the game and it's so great to be here, and it's like watching the play Hamilton and having the fifth string actors there. Like, they just don't care a lot of nights. We joke about Scottsdale games and all that. It's coming to fruition now. LeBron took all those games off in the regular season, and last night, Isaiah Thomas had no shot. None whatsoever.
The Cavs and Warriors are just toying with these teams.
Olynyk had 2 points last night.
After 26 the night before, right, or the game before.
Right. And so, you know, there's a problem. It's a major problem. And I think the Brady concussion thing, yeah, I might be grassy knoll on this, that Gasol didn't just slip up accidentally. But I don't think that I am going too far on this one. I think this is Tom's way of saying, yeah, I'm going to serve it right back at you, Roger, and I'm going to watch you dance, and I'm going to watch you gyrate, and you've got a problem on your hands.
And the fact that Brady, like you said yesterday, never appeared on any sort of injury report his career with any concussion-type head injury makes you even more suspicious.
There's a prominent player that has been on the NFL team here in the past. Okay, I'm not going to say who it was, but this player told me, point blank, he said, the worst time of year is when we're doing our thing in late July and in August, because the league just doesn't care about us. They don't care. And this player, if he were to go and say it nationally, it would make big headlines, but this player didn't do that. It's just really hard to see these teams and these leagues try to dance around the subject of what the problem is here. All right, Good Eat the Movies is next. We're going to talk to Bill, because you know what's going on in sports. Alien, everything, and a couple other things with Bill Gutekunst. That's on the other side. I'm Brad Sussmat. Now, because you know what's going on in the world of sports, it's time to get you ready for Goody at the Movies. Bill Gutekunst, chief film critic for Gannett, AZ Central. How are you?
I am pretty good.
Yeah? You screen anything today?
I'm watching some. I'm actually writing some late reviews. I've been to a ton of screenings lately, so happily on that front, I think I'm done.
I'll see you at Pirates next week. Or have you seen it already?
No, I was going to, but then I couldn't because I had to go to a movie about a Marine Corps dog.
Oh my gosh.
No.
Was it good?
We'll talk more about that later.
All right. Oh, I got you. Roger Ailes passed away this morning. So Roger Ailes is somebody that, if we're talking television and what he did at Fox News, whether you agreed or disagreed with him, he really was innovative and a pioneer on that front end of things. And then he got, of course, run out because of harassment. But when I heard Roger Ailes pass away, that's an iconic figure, in my opinion, in the TV world today. Where are you on that one?
Roger Ailes was a genius. And whether you think he was an evil genius or just a genius probably depends on which side of the political aisle you're on. But there are very few people who made seismic changes in television, and he's one of them. I mean, it seems now, and you know, Fox News people aren't so concerned with the facts usually anyway. They probably think something like that always existed, but it didn't. And I think to the great detriment probably of news. But, you know, Ailes used to come to the TV tour when we would go. And most of the TV executives, they play to the reporters a little bit, to the crowd a little bit. You know, he did not care. He knew he had a vision. He knew what he was going to do. If people said, "Oh, what about this? What about that?" He could not have cared less. Mm. He knew what he wanted to do, and he did it, and he did it right. And he did a lot of other things too, evidently, that weren't so great. But I saw the tweet of the day was somebody from the Washington Post tweeted that in respect to Roger Ailes, all the skirts at Fox News today will be at half staff.
Oh, Oof. Oof. His backstory was he was with Nixon, right?
He did. And he did some work with some Republicans and stuff. And he just had this idea that there was this, that the mainstream media, as we call it now, we didn't call it that because it wasn't any other media. I mean, there wasn't anything to play against it. But there was alternative press, I guess. But he saw what he thought was a need. He said, there's all these people out there that don't like the media. They don't trust them. Nobody's, you know, I mean, I guess what you could say is that his grand masterstroke was he really knew how to preach to the choir. Mm-hmm. And that lives on to this day. If you watch Sean Hannity this week, that he is on another planet, but it is red meat to the Republican base. I shouldn't say to the Republican base, to the really hardcore conservative base.
Well, it's interesting, Bill, because when I first broke into this business, okay, I first break in, I'm 20, and we're carrying a guy named Rush Limbaugh who was in Sacramento at the time. And Ailes and Limbaugh were together back then. And there was this view of...
Ailes worked for Limbaugh.
Yep. There was this view of you do not talk politics on the air. And he took the exact opposite approach and created Rush. And, you know, whether you like him or not, that's how it all started with Ailes.
Yeah. And how many people do the people talk about doing this and people act like, you know, and people 100 times a day, you, me, and everybody else, is, oh, man, you know what I ought to do? I ought to start this and such thing. That makes $1 million. He did it.
Yeah. and times 10.
But the difference is he had identified a true need. For most of us, it's not a need, but for the people who it serves, it was a need. It was something that wasn't being filled, and he filled it. And he filled it with these outsized personalities. And I was thinking about this today, that there's no arguing with these people because that's what they feed on. And he got at that, too. He knew it was about personalities. I've said this a million times, probably on this show as well. If you're just watching breaking news of some sort of disaster or tragedy or something, Fox News, CNN, MSNBC, they're indistinguishable. They all do the exact same broadcast. They all do it really well, by the way, and you know that that's hard to do. It's when you get into the other hours, the personalities, that you see the real differences. And that's what Ailes knew. I mean, he knew before CNN knew, he knew before there was an MSNBC, that personalities are what people tune in to see.
No, that's right. That's right. All right, let's go over the movies. Alien. So there's this thing, and it eats a bunch of people in a spaceship, and they're trying to get away from it before they all die, and then the boat sinks at the end. Is that what happens here? Is that what we have here?
Is that not what happens in every Alien movie?
Right. I don't know.
Yeah, of course it is. But this one is, I get a little confused on the timeline myself, but a couple of years ago, you know, Ridley Scott did the first Alien in whatever it was, 1979. And that is one of the great movies of all time.
Yep.
But the thing about that movie is it's so simple. It's a bunch of people, as you say, on a spaceship that pick up this thing. And what I think is one of the great lines in movie history where the android says, its hostility is matched only by its structural perfection. and then they say, they're like, how can we kill it? He says, you can't. And he says, before they turn him off, he says, I can't lie to you about your chances, but I do offer my sympathies. it's so creepy and so cool. But all it was that. And then the next one comes along, James Cameron does Aliens. That's great, too. You know, it's just like the ultimate action movie. Somewhere along the line, Ridley Scott came back to it and thought, oh, I need to, like, you sort of invest this with bigger ideas. And, like, you know, where did we come from? And how does creation work? And how does the end of the world work? And all that stuff. And he did Prometheus a couple of years ago, which made no sense at all. And it had a great cast of people that sat around and, like, pondered the universe. And, you know, and every now and then here comes a monster, but not very often. This movie is kind of a sequel to Prometheus, and it explains some of that. It makes Prometheus make a little more sense, but not that people were clamoring for that. It's a better movie, and it's a good movie. I mean, they're all exciting, and there's a lot of gore, and the cast is terrific. But, it's nothing you haven't seen before.
Yeah, I gotcha. Everything.
Yeah, you know, my kids keep saying, like, oh, I want to see that. I want to see it. It looks so sad. And I went to see this movie, and I can't get into it. It's about an 18-year-old girl who has this autoimmune disorder, which means she can't leave her house or she'll die, right? So the sort of hunky, soulful bad boy moves in next door. So, ooh, there's going to be trouble. And this is a movie that you go into it, and I expect to cry. I want to be made to cry. I want to be a teenage girl when I go to this movie because I want it to make me sad. And I go in there, and it's kind of going along, and I don't want to give too much away. But then it turns into a completely different kind of movie. And it didn't, you know, I just wanted to stand up at the end. Like, I was promised tears. You know, if this isn't sad at all. You know, and it just drove me crazy that way. And it's kind of got a cool setup. It's kind of a fun setup. But, you know, it was really disappointing to me on the immature emotion front.
I came to this movie to cry, damn it. So now
that's exactly how I felt. Yeah. I mean, that's the whole point. Why make the movie if you're not going to make teenage girls cry?
Yeah, it's like I came to this to laugh, and you guys promised a comedy and said it's just another train wreck. You know, I think you've seen enough of those, right? You know.
Yeah, every week.
Good stuff. You talked to Danny McBride?
I did. I like old Danny McBride. I told him he's a really smart guy, and he went to the North Carolina School of the Arts, which is Winston-Salem, and I lived there for 5 years, so that was kind of fun to talk to a guy like that. But I told him he and Bill Clinton are like the two guys with Southern accents that, like, you get to let them talk and they sound smart. Most people sound really stupid. He said, I believe exactly what he said was, yeah, it's always been that if you need somebody to be a dumbass in a movie, you just give them a Southern accent. of course, I like
That's
listening
great.
That to him. But he is an alien. He's a pilot. And I talked to Billy Crudup, too. He's also in the movie. And we're talking to, you know, and without, I'm not going to say whether they survive or they don't, but we did all talk about how sort of like, you know, going into these, you're marked for death. Somebody's marked for death.
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah.
Most, you know, 90% of you are going to die. And I guess that what McBride kept telling them was, yeah, when they started shooting, dinner reservations would be for 12. But then as they kept going, it would get down and down and down. But McBride, interesting thing about him, he's also a writer. And that's what he wanted to be, as a writer and director. And he and... David Gordon Green are remaking Halloween.
Oh, wow.
And I told him, I said, I'm both thrilled and appalled.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, I mean, you know, the first one is like the greatest, you know, one of the greatest horror movies of all time. He's like, oh, man, I know. But it sounded like he had a pretty good handle on it. He wanted to get back to where it was less gore and more... I've always thought the scariest thing about Halloween was not... The actual killing and stuff, but when the sun starts to go down on Halloween night,
yeah,
and the little kids start coming out, and you know something bad's coming.
Yeah,
and he was all excited about that. So he maybe it'll work. I hope so, because I really like him.
I'll let you go off that. I'll see you probably on next week, in person.
I will.
Stay well.
Indeed.
See
all right.
There's Bill Goodykins, Good Eat the Movies, Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. We want to thank Edwin Rodriguez today, chairman of the board, cohort to Jared Nielsen. Jared is mentoring today, we'll put it that way. Eric Sorensen produces this day in and day out. We go over now to the content side on our website and, of course, work on our TV show as well. Check out our content. Thanks for being with us. We'll see you later.